You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Smith Henderson's debut novel, Fourth of July Creek, follows the life of Pete Snow, a frustrated social worker trying to save the children of his small Montana town. When a boy appears from the woods one day, Pete finds it impossible not to help, despite the boy's dangerous survivalist family. It's published by HarperCollins. It's my pleasure to welcome Smith Henderson to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks. You say that you were partly inspired to write this book by the born-again Christians who raised you. How did that inspire you?
It was a interesting time to grow up when there was a kind of revival in this country of a kind of a Christian fervence, and Reagan Revolution, and there was the feeling that things were maybe going to come to an end.
So everybody wanted to homeschool their kids.
Yeah, and you know, you kind of wondered who the Antichrist was. So that stuff was really interesting. And as I grew up, I found that it was special, you know, a special time.
Well, were you in much contact with survivalists?
My father is a logger, so I spent a lot of time in the woods. And then just growing up where I did, you wouldn't necessarily see these kinds of people that were walking around town, but you knew there's quite a few people out in the woods just making it that way.
Is there a sense of lawlessness in some of these remote areas?
I think the idea is that you don't need laws, that people will, you know, take care of themselves if they're given the opportunity.
Well, a lot of the people in your book are very mistrustful of the government.
Yeah, there's a sense... Montana is a state, you know, that was absolutely, you know, ravaged by industry, and so there's a sense that every institution, you know, is suspect out there.
Well, you've set your story in the late 1970s during Ronald Reagan's presidential campaign. That's before the Randy Weaver Ruby Ridge shootout that took place in 1994.
Yeah.
So this sort of thing was happening all along?
The feeling of resistance definitely came to fruition, I think, when Clinton was elected. I think that's when it really flamed up. But there was that. I think that was the 80s is when that feeling started, and there were people out there. There were a lot of hippies out there too. You know, a lot of let's get off the grid. So it was an interesting time and place.
And they got along?
Insofar as, you know, yeah, I think so, because it was you looked at your neighbor when you needed something, you know, when you were really in danger and you were there for them, but you definitely might be suspicious of the post office.
Well, I just received an email warning from a survivalist group called American Patriots that says there's a strong possibility now of a liberal Auschwitz, because it says there are three clear signs that FEMA camps will open their gates soon: the financial crisis, the food crisis, and martial law. And proof is, I'm quoting, Obama has just signed Executive Order 16303, which gives him the right to institute martial law whenever he wants to. This is the beginning of the end, they wrote.
Yeah.
So this is nothing new.
Yeah, I think if you allow yourself to take these things seriously yourself, you see, okay, maybe I don't agree, but man, they're not far off in terms of what, you know, what we should be anxious about, you know.
You think that FEMA is really opening up?
No, but you know, the drone strikes, you know, around the world, there's, you know, proliferation of our power, you know. This is a pretty frightening time, you know.
What kind of town is 10 Mile, where much of your book takes place?
Well, it's a fictional town that I imagined being in a remote part of northwestern Montana, in the lee of Glacier National Park. It would be, you know, a logging town that had since kind of ran out of resources and was kind of had lost some of its population and was dwindling.
And your protagonist is Pete Snow, who is a social worker who's feeling very frustrated. Why is his job so hard?
Distrust.
People don't trust him because they see him as somebody, a representative of the government.
That's he's the you know, that's the crux of the problem that the book explores. What are our responsibilities and what are our rights? Where does freedom, where's your freedom to live how you want, run up against your the state's responsibility to make sure that your children are okay? And so he's the kind of guy who is walking into these situations regularly, and they're and a lot of times they're really hard.
Did you have to do a lot of research on social work?
I did do a lot of research, and I also worked in a group home for several years, so I kind of realized when I was doing that that there were several kids that were just Tennessee Williams plays unto themselves, that every time you walked into a situation, you were walking into a massively complicated mystery that you needed to solve or try to solve. You know?
Well, you mentioned people being able to bring up the kids the way they want. An almost feral boy turns up from the woods one day. He's in really bad shape.
Yeah, and you can't ignore that, right?
His father, Jeremiah Pearl, is keeping his family in the woods.
Yeah.
They are the ultimate survivalists?
No, they're actually quite bad at it, and that's the problem. The kids in town foraging, you know, and Pete goes out to meet his father, and the father immediately reacts violently and says and threatens Pete and says, you know, Pete says, I wouldn't have brought him out here if I thought you would, you know, run off into the woods and take off with him and make him take off the new clothes I bought for him. And the, you know, the man says, I'd kill him before I'd let you have him. So he's Pete's the only one who, as the story progresses, who can get in there and get with them and help them.
Well, the Pearls believe that the end times are coming, so why would it even matter?
That's their problem. It's pretty hard to wait. to wait for the world to end. But if you think it's imminent, you're just waiting.
Also, the strange coins start to show up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did that really happen?
No.
This is before Bitcoins.
Yeah, this is before Bitcoins. But a lot of the thinking on the sort of, I guess, paranoid right wing is about money and sort of the question of what money is. And the more, as I was writing the book, the more I thought about it, the more perplexing it is. There's a whole section in there about the tulpen woad and where the price of tulips was, you know, went up so high that people were trading tulips for real things, and then it crashed. So markets are weird. Money is very, very confounding.
My guest is Smith Henderson, his novel, Fourth of July Creek. But then Pete has to find a way to ingratiate himself with the survivalists.
Yeah, yeah.
He is putting his own life at risk.
Yeah, that's the thing that I thought was noble about him. He's a very flawed man, but he does do that. He's the only one who can.
Well, he's one of these people who wants to help other people, but his own life is kind of falling apart. Doesn't know how to deal with his own family.
It's an interesting contradiction. You do this kind of work and you suffer a lot from secondary trauma, which is just the constant exposure to primary trauma. You know, children who've gone through the worst kind of things, and it affects you, and it affects your, you know, your personal life.
Well, his own daughter goes missing.
Yeah, yeah. She runs away from home. She's been emotionally abandoned by her parents, who've done a poor job of taking care of her. So in a way, he's maybe great at his job, but terrible at his first job.
How is the 1981 assassination attempt on President Reagan linked to these characters you've created?
There were some instances of historical events that I just knew I had to use that would highlight sort of the fear. And Mount St. Helens is another one. When I remember when I was a child seeing this gray snowfall, and I imagine being in the woods and thinking the end of the world is coming, and you see
it
that.
It was ash.
Yeah, yeah.
The FBI gets involved with Jeremiah Pearl. They think he's linked to the attempt?
Yeah, he's been circulating these coins with strange shapes and figures in them, and he's been writing threatening letters to various figures, kind of like the Unabomber. And so he's just drawn attention to people.
And then your book also deals with the lives of Cecil, a teenage runaway, and his drug-addicted mother, Debbie. Is drug addiction a problem in small-town Montana, or was it in the 80s?
I think drug addiction is a problem always, everywhere. alcohol being one of the most prevalent ones, which is Pete's problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But would the drug have been methamphetamine?
Yeah, yeah. People have always wanted the medicine they need to feel right in their heads. So if they need something to keep them up, get them up, they'll find it no matter where they live.
Some of the characters in your book use God as a way of explaining away their behavior. Pete doesn't buy that.
Pete's very skeptical of that. He's seen too many awful things, I think.
Well, yeah, this book also is, how do they explain God? Does God made me do it?
I think it's more of a feeling, and I think this is fascinating to imagine. You're going through your day, and you're in constant conversation with God. That everything you're doing, in thinking and feeling, is in some way a sign or a directive, or not an order, but just you're in a constant conversation with your personal Lord and Savior, and that's a powerful way to live. Actually, you know, it affects your behavior.
Although this is a lot of serious stuff, the book can be quite funny.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Did the funny things just occur to you as you're writing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, some of them are funny stories. Montanans are pretty funny people, you know.
I never thought of Montanans as being funny people. I always thought of them as being big sky people.
Right, right. Well, there's this false notion that people in the West are laconic and that they don't speak, but it's because Hollywood needed to create an idea of a, you know, stoic figure that could kill people and still be a good guy. So they just made him not say things.
The Gary Cooper, yup.
Yeah, yeah.
This book took you 10 years to write. Did your job in advertising take up a lot of your time and energy? Is that why it took so long?
No, it was just I didn't know how to write a novel, so I had to learn how to write a novel while I was writing it. I didn't start doing advertising until I'd finished the draft and sent it off to my agent.
So. And a lot of people start off writing short stories because writing a novel is really very difficult. How come you didn't just write a bunch of short stories?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I wrote and published quite a few stories, and you know, the stories did pretty well for me. But ultimately, I just decided that you get one chance to write a first book. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write this one first.
And it was the story pretty much in your head from the start in that first draft?
There were two stories. One was about Jeremiah Pearl and a boy living in the woods, and the other one was about a social worker, and they played out in my head for about 2 years, and then eventually I realized
I had to figure out how to put them together.
I realized, well, of course they have to interact with each other. So,
and why have you called your book Fourth of July Creek?
I think it evokes the revolution, the revolutionary spirit, the founding of the country, and it's the sense of place, and I like the idea that there's this location, and there are 4th of July creeks in a lot of states, and that somebody can just name a thing after a holiday to me is just fantastic, especially 4th of July. It's like they must have had a party there and named it that.
Smith Henderson won the 2011 Penn Emerging Writers Award in fiction. He's also won a Pushcart Prize, and he has been published in American Short Fiction, One Story, New Orleans Review, Make Out Creek, and mm-hmm. Witness. And his first novel is Fourth of July Creek. It is published by Echo. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Oh, thank you very much.